Welcome into a brand new episode of the Call the Podcast, recording Monday, August 3rd, bottom of the 12 o'clock hour. I'm Alex Parks, joined as always by Alex Levowitz. We're powered by CLNS Media. We'll get right into it. Sports returned over the weekend. Start with basketball. Joining us to talk about the NBA bubble down in Orlando, we have Jared Weiss. He covers the NBA and the Celtics for The Athletic. Jared, how was this weekend surreal for you? Was it weird? Was it a sense of normalcy, just sort of having basketball back?
Both. Surreal is normalcy nowadays. It's 2020, guys. Got to get used to life being crazy. And it was, I mean, I am in heaven right now because I was excited just when the scrimmage just started. But for me to know that every single day I'm watching basketball from 1 o'clock till 11 o'clock, basically, it's like March Madness for the NBA. This has never existed before. So this is the best. I'm so happy right now.
So obviously they're in a bubble in Orlando, no fans, limited media and whatnot. So there's going to be a different feel to each game. I was watching the Red Sox game yesterday, and you know, in the outfield, you kind of got the sense that players were, you know, there was a lull. There are players who were out of it because there was no crowd involved. Do you sense that there's any tangible effect to having this bubble, to playing in front of no fans in an empty venue?
I mean, I'm sure it's not as fun as black away players playing in the outfield in Fenway Park with no fans. They must really be happy with that. But, you know, the NBA players, they've been pumping in crowd noise into the arena. They're still, which I bet they probably enjoy a little bit, at least a little bit of crowd noise. It was a little too strong at first Bucks-Celtics game where it was drowning out the entire arena. But the thing that's probably really annoying is they're still playing all of the like clap music and chant music, which is only there for the fans to clap along to. So I don't understand why they're still playing that during the games. They should just be playing the new Little Uzi Vert album on repeat, and that's it. Just play that the entire time. And so I think from that standpoint, there's a sense of normalcy, but not only is it that there's a lack of people in the stands, but the sight lines are totally different. Because in an NBA arena, when you're shooting the ball, you're looking through the plexiglass, and there's kind of this like cascade of fans off in the distance. While now it's mostly kind of like dark curtains all over the place and then some light up scoreboards. And a lot of the players I talked to have said that it took them a while to adjust to shooting in that kind of environment. But it seems like they're adjusting and the scores have been through the roof. So, you know, maybe teams are having a little bit of trouble shooting, but defense has been so terrible that the offense is still through the roof anyway.
Yeah. Let's get to the games now. Let's get to the on the court product. Will Giannis ever foul out of a game? What is going on here?
Well, he gets 8 fouls, so probably not. But, I mean, you know, I'm sure you're referring to that Friday night game against the Celtics where he hand-checked Daniel Tice in the stomach and Tice bowled over and they reviewed it for a hostile act and then determined not to call a foul, which was within the realm of the rules is technically allowed to be done, but logically didn't make sense. And I had a tweet that went viral complaining about how the logic of it didn't make sense. But then, you know, Giannis also the play before, I think the foul he got called before that was an unfair call. So, you know, I don't think he deserved a foul out at the end of the day. And so he deserved to stay in that game. You know what? Giannis is a hyper-physical player. And so this is what it's going to be like. You know, people have been complaining about LeBron for years because LeBron is also a hyper-physical player. People are still trying to learn how to officiate Giannis. We've never seen a player like him before. He's basically like if KG was just driving from the three-point line every single play. And, you know, the NBA is still trying to adjust to it. And I don't think Giannis is probably ever going to foul out because he's a superstar player and they tend to, you know, when those guys get in foul trouble, they tend to give them a little bit of a break. And that's good because we don't want to see a game where Giannis is not in there in crunch time.
Another player who will probably one day, hopefully, get the superstar treatment from the officials, Jason Tatum, yesterday had an unreal game, 34 points, I believe, as they beat the Trailblazers 128-124. But the game before that, not quite as efficient. I think he went 2-for-18 from the field. So consistency, it kind of seems like it's a bit of an issue with Tatum. Is this just a young player coming into his own, off to a slow start after a long break? Or is this something to be a little bit more concerned about?
I think it's more of the former. And also, he didn't go 2 for 18. He really went 1 for 17. And then there was an own goal by the Bucks in that game where, because Tatum was the closest player on the court, they gave him the basket. So he really went 1 for 17. And of course, that was the second worst game of his career. The worst game of his career was in November when, against Dallas, he went 1 for 18. So it was almost the worst game of his career. But almost. So, yeah, I wrote a huge piece on this for The Athletic this morning, I think. And the big difference was Tatum came into that game, and not only was his rhythm off as far as the timing of his moves and finding the right spots to get to and stuff like that, but his jump shot, he was drifting to the left a little bit. And so Jason Tatum, when he shoots the ball, he gets a big wide base where he sticks his feet out beyond the width of his shoulders to get himself on balance. And then he sways his legs forward towards the basket. So he drives all of his momentum towards the basket. But in that Milwaukee game, because he was pressing and because he was rusty and he hadn't faced a great defense like Milwaukee's defense, which is one of the best defenses in the history of the NBA, he found himself that he was just not getting on balance. He was rushing and his body was drifting to the left a little bit. He was turning his hips in the middle of the air a little bit. And so because of that, he was short most of the time, or he was overshooting and he was long most of the time. And then over the course of the weekend, he studied the film. He saw that he was drifting a little bit. He worked with his coaches to fix it. And he comes out against Portland and he's perfect. And he looks just like the guy that lit up Portland for like 40 points just a few weeks before the shutdown happened. So what's so special about Jason Tatum is his ability to make micro adjustments from game to game is off the charts. And it's part of why he's so successful. And it's part of why he's turning into a bona fide superstar. He's pretty much already a superstar at this point. He's just crossing into that threshold. But it shows that he has a long way to go because his ability to learn and correct is up there with the best of them.
So let me ask you this then. Obviously, Tatum played a big part of it, but we saw two very different games from the Celtics to start this bubble. They have the big deficit to Milwaukee, come all the way back. I believe they took a lead in that game very briefly, but ended up losing at the end. And then against Portland, it's kind of the opposite. They get off up to a big 19-point lead. Game gets close late. They pull it out. Which is closer to the real Celtics team? Which is closer to the product we can expect to see down the stretch here and in the playoffs?
I mean, I think that Portland one is more reasonable. In that against Portland, while I actually thought that their execution in their half-court offense, the plays that they were running, their ability to read off of each other and improvise, that looks actually still pretty rusty, but they were incredible in transition. Every time that they got a rebound or a turnover, they were flying down the floor, finding a three-point shooter, which was usually Jaylen Brown, finding someone leaking out ahead who could dunk over somebody, which was, again, usually Jaylen Brown. they were playing incredible transition ball. And so I think that's generally what you're going to expect. The Milwaukee game was, I thought, a very impressive performance because they're facing the best team in the NBA. Milwaukee is incredible. And every single game against Milwaukee has been the Celtics get destroyed by Giannis in the first quarter. They start to figure it out towards the end of the first quarter. They dig themselves out of a deep hole. In the first game against the first game against Milwaukee, they ended up pulling off the comeback and winning pretty comfortably. The second game that was in Milwaukee, they fell into, a 27-point hole, and they almost shot their way back in because Kemba Walker had an insane second half, and they fell just short. So, I think against Milwaukee, it's probably always going to be that way that, Milwaukee's physical dominance with Giannis and also Chris Middleton, who's been playing like a superstar this year, it's just so hard to overcome early in the game, but they eventually find their footing and they adjust and they figure it out. And that's because Stevens is obviously one of the best coaches in the league and he's able to make adjustments. He has backup plans that he can go to. He always finds a way to, right the ship in some direction. And we saw that in the Portland game where against Portland, things were falling apart because they couldn't figure out how to defend CJ McCollum or Damian Lillard coming off of screens. And they eventually figure that out and they won in the end.
So you mentioned Brad Stevens. There's a debate, the debate in sports a lot, which sport does the coach matter the most and the least? And basketball sometimes gets put on the back end of that spectrum. But in a bubble in this season where things are so unusual and you really don't have any status quo, any sense of routine, how much more of an impact, how much bigger of a plus is it that the Celtics have a coach like Brad Stevens?
it's huge. I mean, I guess if you're comparing the three main sports, I would probably say football, the coach is the most important. And then baseball, it seemed like the manager has the least impact on the specific play. But in basketball, I mean, Brad Stevens, he calls all the plays. So he's kind of, you know, it's very similar to football, frankly, the way that he manages his team. Brad Stevens, probably 80% of the time, feeds the play to the point guard coming down the floor, and the point guard then calls it out. So Brad Stevens is like an offensive coordinator in football in that regard. And so that's proving to be incredibly important. So he's literally every single time trying to figure out which play should I run and then actually calling it. And so people, and when it comes to basketball, they tend to think that coaches are just kind of watching and making decisions and making substitutions. But at least with Brad Stevens, and I think probably most coaches in the league, they're actively calling the plays most of the time. They're yelling out defensive assignments, defensive adjustments in the middle of possessions. I mean, having a coach that is making these active reads and reading the floor throughout the game is extremely valuable. So Brad definitely gives them, I don't know if it's a necessarily distinct advantage over the, you know, over the competition, because most of these coaches are very good and very active throughout the game, but it definitely, he definitely has a huge impact. There's no question about it.
Well, I more so meant, and I get that. I more so meant as a leader where there's so much uncertainty going around, right? These guys are in a position they've never been in before. They're away from their families. Like in that situation, having a guy like Brad Stevens, a guy who's been around, a guy who's not just been around the league, but been around a lot of these players for a long period of time. How much of a bonus is that for the Celtics, that where there are almost no constants in this whole thing, everybody's doing brand new things, Brad Stevens can be some sort of constant?
Yeah, that's a perfect description. And I think the big thing is that his team trusts him. And so they, you know, I think that this is a situation where, because there's so much uncertainty and because so many guys are still raw or unprepared or whatever, that a lot of players can maybe be a little bit insubordinate in a situation like this if they didn't trust the coach. And you don't have to worry about that with Brad, and particularly with the players, because, I mean, there was insubordination in the past with some of the more ego-driven stars that he's had. But luckily for him, he has two veteran stars that have, like, the smallest egos imaginable in Hayward and Kemba, and then two young emerging stars that also don't really have an ego. And they're just young enough where they're still pretty controllable, at least. So he really has, you know, Brad Stevens, it's not like he can just win in any sort of situation. We saw that where there was these massive ego issues with the team last year. But we're seeing this year that when you give him the guys that fit his personality style, he can have incredible success.
And you mentioned, you know, the two sets of stars that we have, Hayward and Kemba, and then Jaylen and Jason. Do you feel like we saw yesterday 30 plus points for both Brown and Tatum? I think it's only the second time they've ever done that. I get the feeling that we're going to see more and more of those types of performances between those two. Do you feel like this is an opportunity to kind of pass the torch that these two guys, I know we're talking about Hayward and Kemba, who both have max deals, but it does feel like this is kind of passing the torch to these two other young guys who are the future, who are legitimately the building blocks for this team. Do you agree with that?
No. And here's why.
No. Okay.
The torch has been held by everybody already.
And okay.
Kemba Walker just the other day said what you're saying, that these young guys, Jaylen and Jason, are going to be able to carry us to great heights. And you know what? Kemba's been saying that since he got here. Mm-hmm. And that was the biggest difference between him and Kyrie. Was, and of course, to be fair to Kyrie, Jason and Jaylen were not at this level last year. This is a totally different scenario. But Kemba has been from day one saying, I'm here to be part of a great group. I bring what I bring to the table. I have my experience. But I can also see that there's these two great emerging stars next to me. And I want to be able to feed that as much as possible, because as their tide rises, all of our ships rise. And so Kemba has always had that approach to it. And then Hayward has always been the most complimentary star, both with an I and with an E. He's praising everybody else, and he's happy to play his role, playing off of each other. And frankly, Hayward is best in a situation where he gets to handle the rock, but his main role is to playmake and then take the shots when they come to him. So this is a very symbiotic relationship between their four all-star caliber players here. And that's why they're so good so soon, is because they all fit into their roles very distinctly, and they're all happy to do that.
Going back to Kemba real quick, the minutes restrictions obviously still there. Do you think it's realistic to expect he gets to a point where he can play upwards of 35 to even 40 minutes a night? And how important is it if the Celtics want to chase a title that Kemba gets off that minutes restriction?
Both, yes. Extremely important. He needs to be playing the full minutes. They have to have him out there as much as possible if they're going to win. And, I mean, this is – the minutes restriction was designed to gradually increase. It was 20 minutes the first game. Sunday he played 22 minutes. I'm sure we'll see him play 22 to 24 on Tuesday's game. So it's going to keep going up and up more and more and more. He's not, it's not like he's on a minutes restriction because he's hurt. It's that he's on a minutes restriction because they're slowly strengthening him and they just want to be careful that they don't overexert him before he's ready. But the goal the whole time has been to make sure that he's off the minutes restriction by the time the playoffs start.
All right, Jared Weiss covers the Celtics for the Athletic. Jared, who's your pick? What's your finals matchup?
Ooh, that's – yeah, I've been going Clippers over Bucks this whole time. But after watching the first couple of seeding games, I'm not sure if that's actually changed, honestly, although it still remains to be seen how many guys the Clippers can actually get back. They're not going to win without Trez back, and Trez is obviously grieving over losing his grandmother right now. We don't know when he's going to be back in the fold. I mean, after Friday night, I would have said it's clearly Milwaukee, but then Houston played their best possible game and managed to beat Milwaukee. I think either way, at the end of the day, I'm leaning towards Milwaukee here. I think I'm going to go with Milwaukee over the Clippers now as my pick.
That was Jared Weiss. He covers the Celtics and the NBA for the Athletic, and we thank him for taking the time. You can follow him on Twitter at Jared Weiss NBA. Lebowitz, I thought that was really interesting how Jared broke down Jason Tatum's mechanics. I thought that was fascinating.
Yeah, I love that type of stuff because, I mean, that's not simply skill. That's obviously trying to evolve as a player, trying to change in real time. And it's one thing to be, you know, a super athlete. It's another thing to have the drive to continue to want to get better and the wherewithal and the basketball IQ to be like, all right, this is wrong. I need to do this, and that will correct the problem. For, you know, Jason Tatum, who's only 19, I say that jokingly. But right. For Jason Tatum,
no, it's a good joke. I do like that joke.
It's a great one. I'll never stop saying it. But for a young guy like him to already have that quality and to be where he's at this point, I mean, it's huge. It's huge. And again, we saw it yesterday. Brown and Tatum combined for 64 points. And especially Brown, who's kind of getting overshadowed by Tatum, who had 16 in the fourth quarter. That's what you want to see. Yes, they blew a 24-point lead, but when it came down to the fourth quarter, it's kind of very Celtics-like. They were able to pull it out, and I think that is indicative of you know, a competitive drive that they have on that team.
And that's also basketball to an extent. We might forget because we haven't watched in a while, but it's not that uncommon. I mean, 24 is a lot. That's an extreme example, but it's not uncommon for a team to go up 10 to 15 points early and then midway through the fourth quarter, things sort of settle back in and it becomes a game again. That's not that far out of left field. I'm not going to look at that 24-point collapse and write it off as some sort of major flaw. To be fair, I'm not going to look at their comeback against the Bucks and, you know, hold that in any major high regard. It's impressive. Like Jared said, the Bucks are the best team in the NBA. But I'm not going to look at either of those as some sort of defining moment of the Celtics in the bubble, I don't think.
And I also think that we've been saying this for the past few years, but this is a window. And this isn't the year, although they could, I don't think this is the year people are you know, expecting the Celtics to make that jump to be NBA champions. They're young, and they're going to continue to get better. So you'd have to think that these blown leads – and these tight games will become less and less frequent as, you know, Tatum and Brown get older. And when you have that veteran leadership, that codependent relationship between, you know, Tatum and Hayward and the other two, that's awesome. It's great. It's almost kind of Bruins-like if you're going to make a cross-sport reference. You have some veterans who are still very productive and good leaders, and then you have young guys who are superstars are coming into their own. So it's going to be a lot of fun to watch this bubble work out for him.
Well, let's get to the Bruins because they opened up this weekend too. Not as well as the Celtics did. They struggled pretty heavily yesterday. And again, I'm fine not putting a ton of stock in it. It's a seeding game. It's not a true playoff game. It's their first game back in a while. I think, too, it's been hard to – it's harder to – granted, the Flyer, like I said, the same stopping block. I think it's harder to have simulated reps in hockey than you do in basketball. And they didn't have their best player for most of practice, right? David Pastrnak's exceptionally rusty. So, you know, Patrice Bergeron didn't practice today. To say I'm not concerned at all, I think, would be an understatement. You certainly have to come away with that performance that there's some red flags. But, again, they don't have their starting goaltender. Their best goal scorer is incredibly rusty. It's their first game back from a four-month break. I think anybody panicking about the Bruins right now, you can be worried. You can be a little worried. That's fair. I think anybody panicking about the Bruins is just looking for something to panic about because we know how Bruins fans tend to do that.
Of course. I think we got to give it a couple more games until we start actually panicking. We got to see Tuukka in net as well. Not that Halak's a slouch, but you got to get your number one goalie in there. And when he's healthy, I think that does change the emotion in that locker room and the mindset. But yesterday, yeah, it did look like they weren't playing as physical. And obviously the Flyers played really well. I mean, they were picking their spots left and right. So it's not all on Halak. It's not all on the Bruins, but they were definitely a step slower than the Flyers. But we'll see. It's game one. I think to put a lot of stock in it would be a little, short-sighted. Let's see what happens when Tuukka's back. Let's see what happens if Patrice can get back to close to 100% or 90% or whatever. And when Pastrnak gets back in the groove, I think we'll see a different Bruins team like we did, before the hiatus.
Right. You can talk to me and then we'll do a show then. If that's their first playoff game, right? If that's their first quarterfinals game, yeah, we can ring the bells and raise the alarm and all that. These first three games, it'd be nice if they get the number one overall seed. The truth of the matter is it's hockey. So whether you're playing the seventh seed or the eighth seed or whatever it is, it's more going to be matchup based and there's no home ice advantage this year. I'm not, if they get the one seed versus the three seed the Bruins do, I'm not going to get hung up on that. I'm not entirely worried about that. I don't think there's any reason to be.
I don't think there's any benefit this year to try to have the one seed. Because I know it's cliche, but you got to beat the best to be the best. And in hockey, it's a sport where it never really matters. Home ice is not that important in the first place, and no team has it right now, obviously. You're playing it at neutral sites. So this is more of a preseason, in my opinion. Not that that should be their mindset, but that's the feel that I have. They're already going to be in the postseason. We know the talent that the Bruins have. If it takes one or two games for them to get their legs under them, then so be it. They're not 100% right now, and I'd rather make a full assessment when they are 100%. If Pastrnak's back after a couple games and he's not playing like he was, and if Tuukka's still sick and they have to rely on Halak in net, and Patrice is still banged up, then yeah, there'll be something there. But right now it's one game, and overall I am excited to see them back. Although yesterday it was definitely it wasn't the funnest watch for sure.
I will say, though, the overall product has been outstanding.
Yeah.
We've had, two overtime games, three overtime games so far, a handful of overtime games. They're on all day. The quality of the game hasn't been that bad. I mean, they're competitive. There's been fights. There's been, these guys aren't – some people thought, in the first round, guys might, take their foot off the gas a little bit. It's been a while since they've played. Some of the games you talk about, the seeding games, don't have as much meaning. No, it's been quality hockey so far. So that's been – I was a little worried that it was going to be a little slow at first. Guys get their legs back under them, whatever. But, no, it's been very entertaining as a whole to watch overall.
And they've also – I like how they're kind of cheeky about it. The NHL put out a thing on their – on the Jumbotron or whatever you want to call it. I don't know if it's that Jumbo.
Yeah, I saw
that. Today's attendance, zero. So that's kind of cool. It's fun. It's reminding us we're all in this hellhole.
What about the people working? Do something funny. Make it I don't know. I think it could have been funnier than zero. Do include the players or something.
Probably be 60 people, right? 50 people?
Right. 50 including the players or something.
Yeah. Yeah. That's in parentheses under the 50. Yeah. So it's, but I think, and this was kind of the point that I was trying to get to with Jared is yesterday, if you watched the Red Sox game, you saw Aaron Hicks, who's a Gold Glove caliber center fielder. There were two plays. J.D. Martinez hit a double that should have been caught at the warning track in center. Then I think it was Kevin Pillar who did the same thing in right center. And both plays, Hicks just didn't get to the ball, even though he was there. Like, I don't know what it was. Alex Rodriguez brought the point of, like, there's no one in that venue. It's easy to kind of lose your focus from pitch to pitch. It's like Little League. And I know baseball is different.
To be fair, Alex Rodriguez brought up a bunch of weird points last night.
He did, and he's horrendous. But every squirrel finds a nut once in a while. So, and he did. I thought it was an excellent
point. Was it? What was it? Michael Jordan, Tiger Woods, Aaron Judge?
That was the worst thing ever.
Okay. Aside from the obviousness of that,
yeah.
You're not even going to put Tom Brady in there?
It was
the a-hole.
It was insulting. At least he didn't put himself in there. That would have been
right. You're right. You're laughing, but you're right.
Yeah, he could have. He was thinking it. He was definitely thinking it before he said it. And the Matt Vasgersian, who's, you know, my ears are bleeding after Aaron Judge hits a home run. Then Rafi Devers hits one that's, although he did go a little nuts for that, but it was a lot. I didn't like last night's broadcast. That's besides the point. The main point I was getting to is, you know, when you're in a different venue and where no one's there, it changes the atmosphere. And that's, you know, a big part of playing sports on that level. I think with basketball and hockey, I think you can get away with it more so than any other sport because you're on that playing surface. And I feel like it turns into more, you know, pond hockey or street ball. And that's fun. And I think that's something that kind of gets guys going. You don't get that with baseball. And I forget why I even brought that up, but it's an interesting quality to the predicament we're kind of in. And I'm glad to see that at least with those two sports or those two leagues, the NHL and NBA, it hasn't taken away from the quality of play. We're still seeing, you know, sports at a high level and I enjoy it. I don't care that some people consider it meaningless. It's been fun to watch. And, you know, I think in another week, we'll be in the thick of it and maybe even it will be a distraction from all this, you know, chaos.
Question is, will we have baseball in a week?
Because that's a great question.
I mean, last time we did the show, what was it, Thursday? Did we do Thursday or Friday? I think it was Thursday, right?
I think it was Thursday, yes.
Thursday. I mean, we were talking about baseball should shut down, and then you had the announcement that they were telling networks to prepare alternate programming in case there were no games. And Manfred came out and said, or somebody came out and said that Manfred would cancel the season if they don't get it under control. And then all of a sudden, the Phillies have false positives, which I don't know if I totally believe that. And they're going to play. They're going to keep playing this week. I have so little trust in Rob Manfred right now. I'm going to call him Mob Ranford because I just don't even want to say his name. Like, I, this is a pretty serious accusation. I don't say this lightly, but again, the season's on the brink of getting canceled. And then all of a sudden, a bunch of the positives that everybody's worried about turn out to be false positives. I have trouble believing that that's not a coincidence or that that's a coincidence. I do. They've been so despicable about how they've handled every single step of this. Like, are they just going to start burying tests to finish the season? They've been so focused on the bottom line, and this isn't hearsay, this isn't conjecture, this isn't me just randomly dumping on the league to do it. We have evidence. Player safety was not considered in any of this. Are they just going to power through for the bottom line, do what they need to do to save face from a PR standpoint, and if people get sick, if there's outbreaks, so be it. You move on. Is that the plan right now? Because it certainly feels like it.
Yeah, I think they're going to try to power through. What you risk when you do that is obviously player and MLB staff's safety and health. So my concern, maybe it's not a concern, but what I think might happen is you might have this mass exodus from the game.
That's
organized by the players. Yoenis Cespedes, although he didn't do it in the best manner.
No, he did it in the best way. No, you shut your mouth. That is absolutely the right way to do that. 100%. Are you kidding me? Especially because he's doing it to the Mets.
Yes. You know what? It is very Mets. But this is a guy, Yoenis Cespedes, who's made a lot of money from not playing, from getting hurt from the Mets. And it's kind of a slap in the face when you haven't been able to, you know, do what you're paid to do. And then your thank you to the club for continuing to pay you while being hurt all those, you know, all those months and all those games is to get up and leave and just completely ghost them.
But you know what? To be fair, as much as it's a slap in the face to the Mets, it is also a slap in the face to Major League Baseball, which is well-deserved.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll put what he did to the Mets aside because, oh my God, that makes Manfred look so bad.
It does. It does to an extent. To play devil's advocate real quick, though, and I actually do believe this partially. The players are not innocent in this whole thing. The stubbornness from MLB players, both past and present, is, I think, the most staggering thing in sports. I think that it's worse than any other league. They don't like change at all. They don't like doing anything they don't want to do. And I think you have seen the market for free agents and whatnot drop because of that mindset. They could have had a bubble. They could have made this work. It could have been a successful shortened season. They could have followed the template of the NBA and NHL, and this would have gone very smoothly. But players didn't want that. And that's not Rob Manfred's fault, necessarily. I mean, he's not completely absolved from all blame, but he is not responsible for completely, entirely responsible for this situation that we're in. I think player stubbornness cannot be overlooked. And you know, the season is going to be squandered. I think we're going to have a suspended season. We're going to have minor league players continue to be called up because high-profile players are going to opt out. Simply because, at the end of the day, players didn't want to do the bubble. I think that's what this comes down to. Did Rob Manfred handle this well? No, he's horrible. He should probably resign or be fired. Whatever you want to do, MLB, get him out of there. He's not good at that job. But there is a legitimate problem with the mindset of MLB players and baseball fans as well, partially. And I think that we saw that play out firsthand with this situation that we're in right now, and it's much bigger than that, but I think that's something to talk about, and it hasn't been talked about as much as it probably should.
I'm still not totally convinced they're going to suspend the season. Again, I think they're just going to power through. So
maybe, but if you're you know, getting paid $30 million a year, if you're Mike Trout, has a newborn kid, and I don't think he's going to opt out. I think he's, you know, a company man. But why would you stick around when you already have all this money saved in the bank? You don't need to play. You don't need to risk your health. You don't need to risk your family's health. And it's clear that your employer is not taking the proper steps to make sure that you don't get sick or that your family doesn't get sick. There should be no trust from the players. I know I say, it's somewhat contradicting, but both sides are to blame here. And I wouldn't trust. I just don't trust either of them. At the end of the day, we're gonna have a horrible product by the end of the year. I'm sticking to that take.
Yeah, no, it's gonna be bad, and the next CBA negotiation is gonna be beyond ugly, I think.
Oh, because
this is all. I mean, you talk about they'll get through this season, and then hopefully we have a vaccine, and you move forward business as usual going forward. But this is all gonna rear its head again once you get to whenever for each league, really, but especially baseball. Once you get to the next CBA.
One more thing. I swear to God, if we get to like January and February, we're still in this, and the MLB doesn't have a set, you know, protocol or do the bubble for spring training and whatnot, I'm going to lose my mind. I'm going to lose my mind, and I think it's going to happen. So
they
get
should
ready
ideally
for it.
Be planning that right now.
They should be. But do you have confidence that they will be?
Nope.
Or that they are, rather? No. I have zero confidence that they are because, you know, they're short-sighted. They don't really care, and they're incompetent. They are incompetent. So, you know, this season's a wash. Is next season a wash? And this is a point you brought up plenty. Next year is the one to look for, and I think that's, you know, that's what you're talking about. No one else really is. And the closer we get to that, the further we get into this horrible situation, the more concerned I am about that as well.
And it's not, I've seen people say they can't plan because you don't know what it's going to be. Things change so much. All right, have a couple plans. This is what we're going to do if it's completely uncontained. This is what we're going to do if there's no vaccine, but the virus is contained to these small areas. This is what we're going to do if there is a vaccine. And then the worst case scenario there is you make all those plans, you don't need them because everything's fixed. So, you know.
Hey, you'd rather be prepared and not have to use, you know, what
is it? hope for the best, prepare for the worst, right?
Exactly. And that should be the MLB. And they, if they don't have a task force trying to organize this, that's a problem. But again, the players did not want to do the bubble this season. Are they going to want to do it next year? And I think that's half the battle. You're not going to be able to travel from city to city if we're still in this situation and we can't get vaccines to most of the U.S. population. So we'll see. I'm not optimistic. I think we had at least, 6, 7, 8 months left of, this complete hell.
You got anything else for us today? You ready for this hurricane?
I'm ready for this hurricane. Hey, these golf courses need some rain. So bring it on.
You do. You're right. I just need the humidity to break. I got to tell you, I don't have AC at my place, and I can't sleep anymore.
That's tough, man. That's tough. I can't. I need it. Right now, I got one of those. I got like a Red Sox clock. It looks like a scoreboard. I've had it for like 10 years. It's great. Although I might take it down depending on what happens next year. Huh. And it, 70 degrees, but it fluctuates between 68 and 70 in my room. I'm a 68 degree guy. That's the perfect sleeping temperature. If it's over 70, I sweat. It's brutal. I run hot.
I don't really know exactly how hot it's been in my apartment, but I took chicken out to defrost the other day and it started to cook. And I'm not even exaggerating that much.
It was turning gray, wasn't it? Yeah.
Turning like I don't know, what color does chicken turn when you cook it?
It turns white. Whitish. Yeah. Hey, yeah,
I defrosted like brick chicken breast, defrosted like 35 minutes, just sitting out on the counter.
You slow cook. It'll be more tender that way.
Wrong. All right, we'll do a cooking show at some point.
I got the Traeger. I got the Traeger at my house. Me and my brothers pitched in to get my dad one for his birthday / Father's Day. So we need to get into it. Recipes, exchange it all.
Do a Martha Stewart. I think that's the grill my parents have. I think it's at least 10 years old. I think it's about time for an upgrade. We're talking about doing that next summer. So you got to get that, the one that you can sear. You know what I'm talking about? The sear burner.
Oh, yeah.
That's because I grill a lot of food, so.
Oh, you do? Okay.
You know, steaks? Oh, yeah, dude.
Medium rare, I hope.
I do, like, I do too. Like, when you get at the restaurant, it's like just cooked on the outside with pepper.
With the sesame seeds on the outside and whatnot.
Yep.
Yeah, it's
delicious. And a little soy sauce balls on my crystal. Yep, that's my go-to when I'm out there. That and some green beans. It's a good dinner.
That's a good healthy meal.
It is, right? That's the thing. I'm like, I'm eating healthy. Because normally when I grill, steak tips dripping in barbecue sauce.
Yeah.
Right? Or ribs or whatever. So it's nice to be able to grill and eat healthy. Yeah. We're bored now.
It justifies a 6-year. Hey, listen, we're at the end of the episode. We can talk about it.
We are at the end. If you want any more messages, tweet at us at Call the Podcast. There's also you can find all our shows and you can find them online at clnsmedia.com under the podcast tab. We'll be back with another show probably later this week, if not early next week, but I'm thinking later this week. We've got sports back. We've got stuff to talk about, and there's nowhere else to go because everything's so close. So, until the next one, for Alex Roberts, I'm Alex Sparks. Thanks to Jared Weiss from The Athletic for joining us as well. We will talk to you next time. Enjoy your week.